Good morning and welcome to Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
And I'm Farah Bashir, joining Lubna for today.
And thanks, Farah, for joining. Richard is at Leap in Saudi.
Yes.
So many events happening. We just covered the Qatar Web Summit last week.
Yes.
And before that, STEP Conference. And lots more events to come, I think. But the event season is calming down.
It is.
I think before the holy month of Ramadan.
Of course. And you've done amazing at the Qatar Web Summit.
Thank you. Thanks,
You're
Farah.
Welcome.
Thanks. Guys, stay tuned. There's still a lot of content that we haven't published yet from Qatar. But today, we're going to talk about the diamond industry, lab-grown diamonds versus real diamonds. Lab-grown diamonds are really kind of taking over the mined diamond industry. And then two Swedish brothers have launched a Palestinian Coca-Cola alternative. And Imarat, this is one of the biggest stories happening today, or if not the biggest story. Imarat has offered up naming rights for 31 of its gas stations here across the UAE, so that's exciting. And then all the way from Singapore, we've got the MD of Bits Media, the creator of Muslim Pro, Nafis, with us in the studio today. Stay tuned for that.
Yes.
So Farah, they say diamonds are girls' best friends.
They are.
Would you care about a lab-grown diamond versus a real diamond? Because they look exactly the same. The coloring is the same. The only difference is lab-grown diamonds are much, much cheaper. Mm-hmm. They are anywhere between half of to a quarter of the price of mined diamonds. And they're real diamonds. Lab-grown diamonds are still real diamonds. They're just created in a lab.
Well, technically, of course, as you said earlier, is that diamonds are girls' best friend. Now, either way, if you are buying a diamond and let's say in the future you would want to resell it, you lose its value. Mm-hmm. Either whether it's like
lab-grown or
a different diamond. You know what I mean? Yeah. So either way, you're like losing its value.
Sure.
I would, if I have in mind, like I want to buy a piece of jewelry for investment, I would go for gold because it gets like, you know, like I can resell it for a much higher price.
Exactly. Unless unless the diamond is really of high value or it's a rare diamond, you can sell it at an auction. But we're talking, you know, for everyday, the everyday consumer, let's say, with a budget, why should they spend so much on a diamond versus a lab, you know, mined diamond? I'm not going to use the word real because they're both real diamonds, but a mined diamond versus a lab grown. Actually, just in November last year, there was a report that the diamond industry is coping with a 20% price drop because Gen Z are not that interested in diamonds. And also, De Beers and Tiffany's and all of those who are now also, you know, kind of looking into lab-grown diamonds, and Tiffany's do offer lab-grown diamonds as well. They've had to, but they've argued for so long that lab-grown diamonds are not real diamonds. And, you know, it's been, you know, for a while now, and there was a Netflix documentary called Nothing Lasts Forever, where, you know, people have said that the value of diamonds is a marketing stunt. The diamonds actually don't have value. They're not a commodity like gold.
That is true. That is true. I would not, I would, like, I am from Gen Z. So I do understand where the hype of, or let's say the, against, the not hype.
The lack of hype and interest. Yeah.
Exactly, an interest that is revolving around diamonds comes from. Now, me, as like, as I said earlier, a person from this generation, we often, of course, I'm not speaking for like everyone, but I would get the cheaper one. I would get a lab-grown diamond. I would not get like, you know, like a real expensive diamond.
Absolutely.
Because I would rather like invest in gold.
Sure.
For the for future purposes, it's, I think what happens is that this generation is so smart and they're so fast paced. You know what I mean? And they get bored quite easily. It takes them, their attention span is like 4 seconds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why they, when they are, even by the way, with like not only diamonds, with everything. You know, like when I am buying something, I think there's like a thought process that goes through before even yeah. buying the thing. So let alone diamonds, I would not invest in like a very
makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah. Because even when it comes to watches, for mm-hmm. example, you would rather, I think, invest in a Rolex, which you can yes. then resell. And Rolex, by the way, it surpassed AP, Patek Philippe, a lot of the watch brands, mm-hmm. Richard Mille, in terms of sales. I don't have the exact sale number here. It's on our Instagram, Smash, you can just check it out. Anyways, moving on. So two Swedish brothers have launched a Coca-Cola alternative called Palestine mm-hmm. Cola. Yeah. They're originally Palestinian. It's a family business called okay. Safad Food AB, and it's based in Malmo, Sweden. Mm-hmm. All profits generated from sales of the drinks will go to a humanitarian organization assisting Palestinians. That's okay. according to the website. The drink was launched on February the 14th. The Instagram account already has over 20,000 followers. The company has said there's significant demand for the drink in other countries. Right now, it's only sold in Sweden and not even across Sweden. Mm-hmm. All of just certain cities in Sweden, starting with Malmo. I was wondering, will we see the franchise groups make a move to replace Coca-Cola here, because yes. people are boycotting Coca-Cola, Pepsi, McDonald's, Starbucks. They're saying there's no alternative. There is an alternative now.
There is.
Palestine yes. Cola.
No, there is. You know what? And the thing is, by the way, I'll tell you something, is that I'm not circulating this back to my generation,
yeah.
but we live at a time where people are done with the genocide that has happened, because they're done with the injustice that has been happening ever yeah. since 1948 and everything. So because of that, and with what happened with the genocide that has begun on October 7, people are actually boycotting. And if you've seen the video that has been all over social media about the actual real effects of, let's say, not boycotting, like if you are contributing to, let's say, one dirham
yep.
to a company that supports the genocide and yep. supports the IDF, you are actually affecting, and you are, let's say, not supporting the cause of Palestine. And people go like, fine, yeah, how can we help? Hmm. We're drinking, we're doing these and all of these things. But people do not understand that, you know what, you're saying this, but the way that you're saying it, a million other people are saying it as well.
Sure.
Fine, so, how can I help?
Yeah.
But the same thing that you are saying, it's like everyone has been saying it.
It goes back to the one person can indeed make
exactly.
a change. And
yes.
it's interesting, though, that you're mentioning this, because I spoke to someone the other day, and he works for Pepsi and has worked mm-hmm. for them for a long time. And he's an Arab. And he said, how do I boycott a brand that has helped me my entire life and given me a career? At STEP conference, we spoke to someone at Pepsi, but we chose not to ask him about the mm-hmm. boycotts because he's Palestinian.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is his livelihood. At the end of the day, he has a family, he gets a salary, he needs to pay for his family and their schools and hospitals and et cetera. And then another friend of mine was buying Starbucks the other day and said, and I said, why are you buying Starbucks? Why are you not boycotting? And he said, because it's not the fault of people working at these franchises here in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that are going to suffer. So there are people in the region who have families to feed, who have nothing to do with those brands. It's a job for them at the end of the day. So that is understandable. Mm-hmm. But having said that, the brands are suffering from the boycotts. The sales are dropping.
That
if there
true.
Are alternatives, perhaps, you know, perhaps those corporations can be pushed mm-hmm. to either take action, you know, or the companies with the franchises here can be pushed to, you know, instead of firing people, like shutting down all yeah. Starbucks, you know, cafes here, well, bring an alternative, and then you don't have to fire all those people.
That is true. Look, again, like, see, the point is, I feel like, you know, if it's the company, why would like the franchise, like at UAE, fire people who work at Starbucks? It's not their fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think the boycott is like a movement that is done rather to act. They're targeting the actual Starbucks. You know what I mean? Like the headquarters of Starbucks, because like at some point, when you see like such companies, and mm. as I said earlier, is that people are woke mm. to what's happening, and people are done with genocide and with the injustice all over. You know, it has been going on for so long, and with what happened, it's like people are like, they exploded.
Sure.
So the boycott was, it has always been there, but I think that this time as after what happened, it's that people are like, they are taking this seriously to the max because they're just like done.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We can talk about this forever, but we're gonna move on because we do have a guest waiting outside. Imarat naming rights. Mm-hmm. Companies and brands can now buy naming rights for Imarat fuel service stations in the UAE thanks to Project Landmark. The announcement was made on Saturday at the Museum of the Future in Dubai. Imarat has 127 service stations across Dubai and the Northern Emirates. Out of those 127, it's offering 31 stations. So what does that mean? It means that you can take over the Imarat brand at a station, both brick and mortar wise and then digitally, because they also have the loyalty program. So mm-hmm. let's say, for example, if a company wants to take over naming rights, it will be, let's say, Imarat Smashy, mm-hmm. Or Imarat Loving, for example. And it will be out on the facade. It will be digitally as well. And we're talking thousands of customers every single day. It's about time that they've done this because it's a lost opportunity, I think, for Imarat. So it's going to be exciting. Do you think we're going to mm-hmm. see an Imarat Loving or Imarat Smashy anytime soon, Farah?
I mean, honestly, we spoke by the way about this on the morning show.
Yeah.
And I think personally, it is not going to be making such a big difference because, like, if I am, let's say, like driving and I want to fill up gas, I will just like be on Google Maps, like, hey, the nearest petrol station.
Okay.
And whatever petrol station is going to take me to, I will going to be go. The only thing that it might, the only change that it might contribute to is like, let's say I was saying this on the show earlier, is that if let's say you're on the phone and you're lost and you're trying to explain to your friend or the person that you're supposed to meet where you are, I think the name will make a difference. Mm. And we've seen such funny comments like, oh, Aman.
I mean, that's a good point. I never thought of it that mm-hmm. way. That's a good point. But I think it will make a difference for the brands because that is the place
that is
to advertise. And they're already in talks with Imarat, have received over interest from 20 to 30 companies. They said that this morning in the Business Breakfast show. And a spokesperson also told the Business Breakfast that Imarat is considering an IPO. So mm-hmm. nothing is cemented, but it is considering options to become listed. So
that's true.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. Exciting news. To see the names.
And what's also exciting, and it's a perfect topic in line with Ramadan, we've got the MD behind Bits Media, which is, of course, the creator of Muslim Pro. It's one of the most popular Muslim apps. It's an ultra Muslim app. You can do everything from read the dua to find out where the Qibla is to reading the Quran, and it reminds you of prayer timings. There's a lot of things going on the app. We're going to find out more. He's here all the way from Singapore. Stay tuned. With us in the studio in Dubai, all the way from Singapore, Nafees Kunzker, the MD of Bits Media, creator of Muslim Pro, the ultra-Muslim app, I would say. And just to give our viewers and listeners a bit of background, Bits Media is also the publisher of Kalbox.
Yeah, Kalbox.
A global subscription video on-demand entertainment streaming service aimed at the global Muslim community. But Muslim Pro is what's making waves. And my colleague was just telling me about the app. He says he uses it every single day. It helps you with everything from prayer timings to where the Qibla, how to face the Qibla while praying. Zakat, you can read the Quran through it, it helps you memorize the Quran. It's a great app, and it's no wonder it amassed 150 million downloads globally. I don't know if the number has changed since.
It's over 160 million today. But
over 160 million, okay, fast growing. The Muslim community is quite loyal when it sticks to something, especially when it's when it's a religious app. Welcome to the studio, first of all.
Thanks for having me.
You guys have raised 20 million in funding in December from existing investors, and a new investor came on board as well. Part of that funding you want to use to expand to certain markets, including the GCC. Tell me about that.
Yeah, So, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, we are actually the world's largest Muslim lifestyle app today. But our presence is a bit all over the place. We are in 190 countries, but because we were expanding so much, I think we didn't put a lot of focus on GCC. And because, I mean, of course, its presence and the importance, we want to really come go big in GCC. We want more presence here. Mm-hmm. We are going to work with more partners here.
Right.
That's
how has the interest been so far?
Oh, it's been quite good. It's been quite good. I've been here in Dubai, I think, in the last 6 months, I think every 2 or 3 months I've been here.
Oh, nice.
To talk to different partners and investors as well who are very keen to work with us.
What sort of partners are you talking to? Have you signed with anyone, or just I want to understand the scale of the interest and the kind of partners that you're looking for.
Yeah. So in terms of partners, we haven't signed with anyone yet because, of course, I mean, one of the things that we do is we partner with institutions or people who really believe in the same vision and mission that we do. And it really has to match before you actually go and do something with a partner.
Right.
So both the parties will have to be totally aligned before we sign and announce. Mm-hmm. But we are working with a few different types of institutions. Like, once again, like I said, we are actually a lifestyle app and not just a utility app, which is why probably we have an edge over some of the other apps. We want to provide more services to our users. It's not only going to be utilities and just video content. Mm. So we are talking to financial institutions, we are talking to ad agencies, we are talking to other utility service providers where we can actually work together and really make a difference in our users' lives.
That's really interesting that you mentioned financial services. What kind of services would you like to offer consumers?
Okay, so it has to be step by step. And I think I'll go backwards a little bit and give you a little bit about our vision.
Yeah.
So our vision is to be the digital home for all things Muslim. Mm-hmm. So we have a very strong user base, very loyal user base who use us for the features that we have today. But at the same time, we actually want to provide them even more because they are coming to our app anyway. Just like, for example, someone wants Islamic financial services. It's not very easy in some parts of the world to get the same type of services like you get in the GCC, right? Where Islamic finance deposits is always there.
Absolutely.
Everyone provides the same, provides these services. But a user sitting in US may not have that access. So we want to be the bridge over there to provide Islamic deposits and Islamic finance opportunities for some of these users.
Sure.
At the same time, again, halal food, you get a lot here, a lot maybe in Indonesia, but if you go to Europe, in some of the smaller places, you don't get it. So we try to provide access for that. So that's how we want to be more relevant to our users.
That's what I was going to ask you, because there is a gap for that, you know, ultra lifestyle app. Are you going to be competing with Deliveroo? What is the scenario that
we have no interest in competing with someone like a Deliveroo. So one thing we really believe in, and I think this is very, very natural, that you have your core services, right? You have to be very, very good in your core services first, and provide that for your users who come to you for that, and then slowly you branch out. But for us, I mean, even 3-4 years ago, we used to be a very small company. We are a small homegrown company that has gone global, right? So it's not possible for us, or for anyone for that matter, to really get into a Deliveroo type business for halal food and compete with them.
Hey, I don't know. There is
it is not impossible.
A market for that.
There's definitely a market for it, but it will need a lot more focus for us to go into that. and then we may lose our core focus.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to partner with different institutions in different countries and provide those services. Okay. That's the reason we are looking for partners everywhere. So a particular, let's say, European country, there may be local services which provide something like a Deliveroo. So we'll partner with them and provide the same services. Right. And the idea behind everything is not only to make money or get a commission out of it. The idea behind it is to have more customer engagement, more people to really use our app and really get benefits out of it.
Sure.
So it's a bit of both. While we want to provide a lot of different services, there has to be a mix, and we have to stay true to our core that we have.
Absolutely. But we got to make money as well, right?
Of course. Of course. We have to survive.
Exactly. Help us understand, the app is free. There are in-app purchases. There are also ads in the app. It's from what I've heard from users of the app, it's a bit of an inconvenience for them. It's a new feature. It's been popping up. Those ads have been popping up. Now, I know as a business you have to make money, obviously. Mm-hmm. Help us understand the revenue streams.
Sure. So currently we have two revenue streams in our app today. Like you've mentioned, the in-app purchases. So you can actually subscribe to our Muslim Pro app, mm-hmm. where if I go to two extremes, one is you don't pay anything and you get most of the features, but not the content.
Right.
The call box content you don't get,
right.
But you also see ads. Hmm. Okay. And on the other side, we have the fully paid premium version where you have every single feature. You have all the content and you don't see any ads.
Right.
So we have both ads and subscription revenue today, and I would say 75% of our revenue comes from ads and the rest from subscriptions today.
Okay.
But we are slightly changing the model where you can actually now have different types of subscriptions.
Okay.
So you can actually have a subscription where you can just remove ads and enjoy the basic versions. Mm. You pay very little money for that.
How much is that subscription going
so
to be?
So that would also, again, be different in different regions.
Of course, yeah.
Because, we operate in different markets. Like someone in Indonesia or India would not be paying the same amount for, compared to someone in US or Europe.
Sure.
But it's like 50 cents to a dollar, $2 a month. Uh-huh. They can pay different amounts.
Okay.
I think for this, but it's actually, you can even have a very cheap version to remove the ads.
Okay, right.
Okay, so you have to understand that, yes, we have to generate money, but at the same time, we have to be in the community. We know that different countries work different ways, there are cultural diversities. At the same time, in terms of purchasing power also, it's very, very different.
So we are going to charge us more in the GCC? Everyone charges us more.
Actually, no. And while I was doing that, in terms of charging, we are actually also going into a model where we have rewarded ads. Mm. So when you have rewarded ads, you actually don't have to pay even for the best content that you have.
Like, explain that to me.
So let's say we have more than 1,200 hours of Islamic cultural content in our call box product, which is actually part of Muslim Pro, by the way. Everything sits under one app.
Yeah.
It's one app. It depends on what you have access to and what you don't have access to. So over there, we have our originals, we have licensed content, we have different types of content. Sometimes, like if you pay, if you're a premium version user, you get access to everything. But sometimes you have special content that we have where you can actually watch an ad, just like your YouTube or anything else that you use. You watch an ad and then you can watch that content.
Right.
So we'll have those options as well,
right,
where people can choose what they want.
Hmm. Okay.
So for everything, like even our latest version that came out last week, we started AI-based search engine for Islamic questions and information, verified information. Now, over there also, if you're a free user, you can actually have access to a particular number of questions a day or something. But
nice.
If you have, we also have the rewarded ads option where you watch a few ads, then you get the chance to actually use it even more.
Right, right.
So it's a balance, right? While we give you options to users, at the same time, you also help us survive.
Right. Yeah. No. And look, business is business at the end of the day. But yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the 70% revenue from ads and then 30% or so from the subscriptions. Yeah. Is it hard to retain subscriptions? And have you seen a rise in subscriptions or a rise in users since, for example, the genocide started in Gaza? A lot of people have converted to Islam on the back of that.
Sure. So in terms of subscriptions, it's an interesting story for us because we actually started pushing on the subscription model early last year. Before that, most of our revenue was from ads.
Right.
And we started the push on subscriptions after we started Callbox.
Okay.
And Callbox came in with a lot of interesting content, which was missing. And the whole idea of Callbox, and content is not cheap, by the way. We really had to invest a lot of money for this. And we will keep on investing money on this.
As a media company, we understand
Yes,
that.
Of course, you know. it's not cheap. Any content is not cheap. So that's where we started. So increasingly throughout the year, we saw a very, very good increase.
Can you give us a number?
We have, I would say, a few hundred thousand subscribers already in the last 1 year plus, I would say 14 months or so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
amazing.
Which is not right. bad in terms of a new paid subscription base.
Not at all. Not at all.
And with what we have. But we actually believe that more than anything else, the new features we are bringing in, or first part of those features came in last week, where the app is actually way richer than what used to be 6 months back.
Right.
We put a lot of money from everything that we raised. We put a lot into the real AI. We also jumped into the AI bandwagon, AI-based products. And also sure. we revamped the app. I think that made a bigger difference. And we are expecting during Ramadan to bring in a few other things.
Okay.
will actually, we are expecting our subscription base to double this year.
To double this year.
Yeah,
okay, that's incredible. And obviously, naturally, you do see more users during Ramadan.
Yes, of course. I mean, it's normal.
Yeah. What are the, it's funny, we say it's normal, mm-hmm. but then you think that, you know, you want to be a practicing Muslim all year. But then everyone just, but it's a sensitive topic. We're not going to get into that. We're not looking to get canceled, which is actually a question I wanted to ask you is how politically correct or religiously correct do you have to be on the app?
That's actually a huge challenge because it's not about just being politically correct. Mm. Our biggest challenge is that we are a global app.
Exactly.
We are in 190 countries, so we have to be really, really careful about the culture of diversity that's there. And of course, different people have different views on Islam, and there are different versions, different muftis saying different things. And you have to be very, very careful about this.
Does it keep you up at night?
Yes, it does. It really does. And we get a lot of feedback as well. And we have to keep improving and doing things based on the feedback. We have a big customer service team sitting in three different countries to manage this.
I love that you use the word feedback, not backlash. Because people, you know, people get angry and people get very sensitive.
Yes.
And it's understandable, but just, yeah.
It is a sensitive topic.
Sure.
It is a sensitive topic.
Sure.
We have to be very, very careful. And the other thing we do for this is we actually work with a few other partners and scholars all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes mm-hmm. if there is anything totally new or different that we are doing, or there is some feedback from a particular user, we actually go to all these partners and scholars and also institutions. There are institutions in global institutions in US, Europe, Asia, everywhere, who actually do a thorough analysis, research, and come back to us with their views. And based on that, we actually design our products and what we're going to do and take next course of action.
Absolutely. Hey, you can't make everyone happy, but you...
Yeah, you can never do that.
But you can sure try. Loyalty programs. Do you have a type of loyalty rewards program? Are you looking to introduce one?
Okay. You're almost like giving me or letting me or telling, letting you, letting the users know what's coming next. So currently, we don't have a loyalty program in our app, but we are bringing in quite a few new features just after Ramadan, where we would like to do more for our users with loyalty programs.
Okay.
And like I mentioned to you, we want to be a lifestyle app. So with the loyalty programs, users can actually do way more things. Like you can unlock more features in our app with your loyalty, with your prayers done, your duas done, your learning done. You get some reward points, you do different things. At the same time...
Give people more incentives, I guess, because nowadays, you know, it's not like a few decades ago and people work a lot and there are so many distractions out there. So I think it's a great initiative. But go ahead, please.
Yeah, so and then it's, you can actually use those points to have join a teaching session or a live stream with a particular teacher. We have Tajweed lessons. We have other discussions that are happening. So with those points, you can use within the app and do things. And like I mentioned, we are going to get into fintech and other services. And I think once we start, you'll see these points can actually be used for different actions within the app. So we are going to get there.
That's brilliant. Last question. I'd love to sit and talk so much more about this because there's so much to talk about the halal and the Muslim community and the market. Are you planning on opening an office here in Dubai or the GCC or Saudi? What is the plan?
So that's part of the plan. I mean, you started with our funding question, right?
Yes.
So one of the reasons we started or we initiated the last round of funding was actually for market expansion.
Right.
So, and with market expansion, we want to set up a base here in the GCC and also in the Western world, where we actually have a lot of active users there as well. So we want to have a good mix because we started in Asia, but we will come here. We need to work with the GCC to actually go to the next level.
And how many languages is the app available in?
Okay, so the app today is available in 22 different languages.
22.
But you actually have translations for the Quran in 60 languages.
Wow.
And you can listen to the Quran in more than 20 languages as well.
Brilliant.
So like I said, we are in 160, we have 160 plus million downloads and we're in 190 countries. So we have to be cognizant of this fact and be there for every single user.
Nafees, thank you so much. Excited to see what Muslim Pro gets up to in the next couple of months. I'm sure you're going to have really exciting announcements around Ramadan as well. Thank you for being with us in the studios today.
Thank you for having me here. It's been a pleasure.